Hi, it's Mountain Edition, all the news from this week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Zoe Rome, and I'm here with Wyatt Orme.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Wyatt. So election season is coming up, and voters will be deciding on issues from a marijuana tax in Snowmass to a new mill levy for RAFTA.
Cooler weather means fire restrictions have been lifted throughout the valley.
And Colorado senators weigh in on Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Officials have lifted all fire restrictions across the upper Colorado River area, including the Roaring Fork Valley. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
Fire managers say that conditions like moisture and vegetation, current fire activity, and weather forecasts have improved enough to lift Stage 1 restrictions, but warn that people should still be cautious. Three wildfires continue to burn on the White River National Forest. Aspen Fire Marshal Parker Lathrop says officials consider the resource demands of active fires in decisions about restrictions. There are now 31 people and one engine working on the Cache Creek Fire, which is southwest of Rifle. That fire has burned 2,700 acres and is 55% contained. The Cabin Lake Fire outside of Meeker is 93% contained and has burned nearly 6,000 acres. There are 125 active firefighters, including mostly hand crews. The Lake Christine Fire remains 90% contained after burning 12,500 acres near Basalt. 19 firefighters are completing mop-up operations there. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Around Colorado, Democratic candidates for office have raised almost five times the amount that Republicans have. As Wyatt reports, that's true in some local races as well.
Garfield County Commissioner Tom Jankowski, a Republican, is being challenged by a Democrat, Paula Stepp. The last round of campaign finance reports showed that Stepp had raised almost $20,000, more than four times Jankowski. In Eagle County, Republican Jacqueline Cartier is challenging Democratic incumbent Jeannie McQueenie for one of the commissioner's seats. McQueenie received more contributions than Cartier, although Cartier had spent more on the race, including renting office space in both Basalt and Avon for the month of July. The next round of campaign finance reports are due in October.
This fall, Pitkin County Ballot Initiative 1A asks voters to increase their property taxes, up to $7 per $100,000 of assessed value. This initiative, or the Healthy Communities Tax, is used for public health, things like mental health services and substance use support. The funds would go to existing services like programming for seniors and provide new ones like adding counselors. If increased, the tax would generate just over $3 million annually. According to Mitzi Lettingham with Health and Human Services, without an increase, agencies would have to restrict their services or possibly close.
The number of young people in Colorado who declare no party affiliation when they register to vote is rising. KUNC's Michael DeJuana has more.
More than half of voters 25 years old or younger now call themselves unaffiliated. That's according to the latest voter registration data from the Secretary of State's office. Jim Jonas is executive director of the National Association of Nonpartisan Reformers in Denver.
Demographics and aging populations and trend lines would say parties had better look out because kids aren't joining them. I mean, they got to do something to bring these young kids back.
Jonas says the trend highlights frustrations with Democratic and Republican politics. A quarter of voters 25 and under in Colorado are registered as Democrats, and 20% are registered as Republicans. For Capital Coverage, I'm Michael DeJuana.
Sandra Lopez was in sanctuary in Carbondale until about 3 weeks ago. She's an undocumented Mexican immigrant. She hadn't stepped outside in 10 months for fear of being deported. In August, immigration officials promised her she wasn't a priority for removal. Her legal battles continue, though. As Wyatt reports, her attorneys have a new strategy.
A crowd in Carbondale is waiting for Sandra Lopez to emerge from the house she hasn't left in almost a year. She walks onto the porch to say a few words.
I'm very happy today. Finally, I'm free.
Yes.
Lopez was in sanctuary with the Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation. She was safe, living in their parsonage, because Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, doesn't make arrests in what they call sensitive locations, like houses of worship. Recently, ICE promised Lopez she won't get deported, at least for now. So she's headed home to Sylt, and she tells the crowd through a translator she's thrilled about it.
I'm excited to have normal life, to be able to go to a restaurant with my family.
Police arrested Lopez in 2010 after responding to a domestic disturbance at her home. The charges were dropped, but she was still reported to ICE. And ever since, she's known she could be separated from her family. In June, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Pereira versus Sessions, and it just might have altered the playing field. Immigration attorneys everywhere are talking about it.
The caso muy, muy importante, the Pereira versus Sessions.
Actually, there's some good news for immigrants.
The biggest event in the last 40 years.
Jennifer Smith is Sandra Lopez's attorney. Based on the Supreme Court decision, Smith is arguing her case should be thrown out, basically because the government screwed up some paperwork. She has no idea if this will work.
It's exciting. I am excited about it. Promising, that's a different kind of answer, I guess.
What's at issue here is a crucial document in any deportation proceeding, the Notice to Appear, or NTA. The problem is these NTAs haven't been telling people when to appear. Think of it this way. A cop pulls you over for speeding. You get a ticket. You can pay the fine, or you can contest it in court, and the ticket will tell you where you need to go. Sandra Lopez was given an NTA, and it listed the charges against her.
But hers, in the blank for date and time, says to be set.
In Pereira versus Sessions, the Supreme Court decided 8-1 that an NTA without a date or a time was invalid. So if Lopez's deportation started erroneously, Smith is arguing that none of the subsequent rulings in her case hold any water. Lopez is one of many whose case could be impacted.
We don't have a single client who has a notice to appear with a date or time.
Of course, Lopez did come to the U.S. illegally, and the immigration court eventually let her know when she needed to see a judge. So is it fair to throw a case like hers out just because the government didn't correctly fill out a form? Violeta Chapin, a law professor at CU Boulder, says yes, it is.
The United States government also needs to follow the law.
Chapin says not including a date or time on an NTA isn't just a minor error. If the government is trying to deport you, you have the right to fight back, just like that traffic ticket.
Not being told where to go and when to go makes it impossible for you to defend yourself.
Chapin says the government is not thrilled with these new motions to throw cases out based on invalid NTAs.
Understandably, because it's going to be extraordinarily inconvenient to have to look at, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of cases to see whether or not they need to be dismissed.
Sandra Lopez's case is one of many, charting new legal territory as it winds its way through the court system. It's currently with the Board of Immigration Appeals. If they rule against her, Jennifer Smith plans to appeal to an even higher court.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. And Zoe, listeners tuning into Mountain Edition are obviously wanting to stay in the know about local news.
Absolutely. And they can stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page and following us on Twitter at Aspen Pub Radio.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts or by messaging us directly.
You can get your local news throughout the day online at aspenpublicradio.org. Go deeper into stories you hear on air with slideshows, extended interviews, and breaking news stories. You can also stream or podcast your favorite local public affairs shows. See what's new at aspenpublicradio.org.
Ann Schendler, Basalt Town Council member and Aspen Skiing Company vice president, has been appointed to a state commission on air quality. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
The Air Quality Control Commission is tasked with preventing and controlling pollution in Colorado, including setting rules. Under direction from the governor, the commission is now developing vehicle emission standards that will exceed the national requirements. Schendler was chosen to serve because of his scientific and technical experience. He says it's important that states take a leadership role in acting on climate and pollution issues, and the commission's work on vehicle emissions could push other states to do the same.
If other states start adopting those standards, then it could spread throughout the country.
Colorado's Air Quality Commission has led the nation in the past. In 2014, it passed the country's first methane rule, which requires oil and gas companies to limit leaking of the potent greenhouse gas. Schendler's appointment begins in October. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Colorado's U.S. senators weigh in after a contentious week of hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. As Michael DeJuana reports for Aspen Public Radio, one senator has not indicated how he'll vote.
Back in July, Republican Senator Cory Gardner met with Kavanaugh and said he'd make, quote, an incredible Supreme Court justice. This week's partisan fighting hasn't changed Gardner's opinion, while Democratic Senator Michael Bennett expressed, quote, grave concern about Kavanaugh's views on environmental, election, and abortion law.
It's very clear that he would change the voting majority on the Supreme Court and move it in a very, very rightward turn.
Bennett has not indicated how he will vote. His office said he has requested a meeting with Kavanaugh. For Capital Coverage, I'm Michael DeJuana.
A decade-long battle over oil and gas leases in the Thompson Divide area near Carbondale has ended. Elizabeth Stewart Severy has the details.
After an environmental review in 2016, the Bureau of Land Management canceled 18 oil and gas leases owned by the company SG Interests. The company then filed a lawsuit, which was dismissed by a federal judge in Denver last week. It comes after a settlement in June in which the BLM agreed to pay SG $1.5 million. Peter Hart is staff attorney for Carbondale-based environmental group Wilderness Workshop. He says while there are still some development threats in Thompson Divide, this is a major victory for the groups who worked to protect the area.
These leases are the ones that were the closest to Carbondale, and now BLM's decision is final, and these 18 oil and gas leases are officially gone.
Thompson Divide is in the White River National Forest and is used for agriculture and recreation. It also provides high-quality wildlife habitat. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Midterm elections, like the one in November, generally see lower voter turnout. That's typically true in Colorado, where the major parties work hard to increase participation. But that's more difficult than it used to be because of a growing number of unaffiliated voters across the state. To find out why, KUNC's Michael DeJuana traveled to Garfield County.
This is a story about political exiles. The ones who live in the shadows of a world that's colored Republican red and Democrat blue. They're just like anyone else on the streets, or in this case, sitting on a bar stool.
We're so divided. It's just unbelievable. It's hard to even bring this up in a bar right now.
That's Cliff Reddish. I found him at a small pub in the town of Carbondale. He used to be a Democrat, but he started to lose his faith in party politics after campaigning for Bernie Sanders, who, if you recall, won Colorado in a big way during the presidential caucuses.
It was like, wait a minute, these superdelegates come in, and all of a sudden Hillary wins Colorado? That's not a democracy.
And Reddish is turned off by what he sees as a narrow sort of patriotism spawned by Donald Trump's presidency.
I wanted to fill out my voter registration. It said, are you a Democrat? Are you Republican? Are you independent? I said, I'm independent because I'm not with them anymore.
That makes him part of a somewhat mysterious, often ignored, yet potentially powerful majority in Colorado. The 37% of voters who declare no party.
I am a proud American, so I'm having this conflict of, do I believe in democracy? Do I believe in this partisanship? What do I believe in?
What unaffiliated voters want has long haunted pundits, consultants, and the candidates themselves. With roughly 1.2 million active unaffiliated voters in the state, they now outnumber Democrats, who hold a slight edge over Republicans.
It's hard to try to say that independents are as if they're their own party, and they are a party in between the Republicans and Democrats, because that doesn't hold true.
Political consultant Jim Jonas has been watching a growing number of Coloradans leave behind mainstream parties or decline to join them in the first place. Back when George W. Bush was president, the top affiliation in Colorado was Republican. A driving force in the unaffiliated shift are voters 25 years old or younger. About half of them are registered as unaffiliated.
There's a whole lot more of them who are completely dissatisfied with what the duopoly is giving to us. And if you can tap into that piece of it and say, we got to get our government working again, there's got to be a better system than what these two parties are giving to us, let's try it a different way, then I think you've got something to sell.
Jonas cut his teeth in the 1990s as a Republican consultant working with notables like Roger Ailes on ads for President George H.W. Bush. And he was a communications director for Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander's presidential campaign. He watched as bipartisanship became a dirty word.
There was this call for purity within both sides, ideological purity for Democrats and Republicans that I didn't feel comfortable with at all.
Jonas now lives in Denver and wears a few hats, including as executive director of the National Association of Nonpartisan Reformers. Government, his group says, has become unrepresentative and unresponsive.
It takes us until we have an absolute crisis before we're able to deal with anything.
First steps to solving problems like low teacher pay or congested highways are to get more independent candidates elected who would then act as mediators amid partisans in the legislature. He'd also like to see systemic changes that create more competition, participation, and accountability in elections. Fledgling groups across the country and in Colorado are now working towards that goal.
These two major political parties and their billionaire friends have taken over America.
Like Jonas, Randy Fricke is also a used-to-be. In this case, a former Democrat who ran for the Western Slopes seat in Congress in 2004 and lost in the primaries. But he became disillusioned with his party, seeing it as too elitist and front-range centric. In March, Fricke organized what he called an independent caucus and town hall, open to unaffiliated voters of all ideological leanings. About 35 people showed up in Glenwood Springs.
This system isn't working. It's not fair. You know, taxpayers have to fund Democratic and Republican Party primaries. That's not fair. Independent candidates or third-party candidates have to petition onto ballots. That's not fair.
I met Fricke at the library in Newcastle, a small town just west of Glenwood Springs. He's frustrated that some of the most pressing problems in his region and the state aren't being solved.
Yeah, so the health care, the teacher salaries, the cost of living, housing, oil and gas industry regulations.
It's a familiar list of issues throughout Garfield County, where Republicans maintain a stronghold on political institutions, but the most popular voter affiliation is unaffiliated.
We've been deeply hurt by Obamacare. We've been deeply hurt by liberal policies.
Kerry Cooey is chair of the county's Republican Party. People on the Western Slope pay much steeper premiums than the rest of the state for health insurance, and she blames that on the Affordable Care Act. She also points to liberals for backing a ballot initiative that would limit new oil and gas developments to 2,500 feet away from residential areas.
That puts much of the state of Colorado off limits for drilling.
Those familiar fights and messages resonate with voters in the county, Cooey argues.
Well, the people who are still casting ballots are still electing Republicans in this county 100% except for in races where we don't put a candidate to oppose them.
Of the more than 13,000 unaffiliated voters in the county, not all vote when given the chance. In the new primaries where they were allowed to participate for the first time earlier this year, about 1 in 5 voted. Gretchen Brogdon is the chair of the Garfield County Democratic Party.
One of our biggest pushes in this county is that bad politicians are elected by really good people who don't vote.
And believe it or not, she adds, one of her voter engagement strategies is to avoid using the word Democrat.
Because even my generation of folks are more and more unaffiliated. And what I see when I engage here in the community, we get better engagement if we don't put Democratic Party on there. We get better engagement if we lead with progressive or resistance or voting and civic engagement or being knowledgeable. That's when we get our engagement.
Statewide, about 290,000 unaffiliated voters cast ballots in the new primary system, which allows independents to vote for candidates for one of the two major parties, but not both. Here's Randy Fricke again.
I turn that number around. Look, there's 1.2 million independents that did not vote.
That number also includes voters the state considers inactive. Fricke would rather see a system like California's top two primary, where candidates sell themselves outside of party forums.
It's up to us as independent voters to move this country forward.
Talk about what a democracy could look like, and simply being an informed voter also resonates with Cliff Reddish back at the bar.
What I believe in is everybody should vote. And we need educated people. We need people that understand what's going on.
In Glenwood Springs, I'm Michael DeJoanna, KUNC.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. The band March 4th returned to the Belly Up last week. Hear about how the 11-piece band gets its audience dancing on aspenpublicradio.org.
And the Aspen Art Museum asked local artists to apply for a new fellowship. Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. Last week, biologists with Colorado Parks and Wildlife announced they have found a lineage of Colorado cutthroat trout that was previously thought to be extinct. Elizabeth Stewart Severy has that story.
CPW biologists have discovered 8 small populations of the fish living in isolated habitats in the San Juan River Basin in southwest Colorado. Officials say advanced genetic testing shows distinct markers that identify this lineage as being unique. There are 3 related subspecies of cutthroat trout in Colorado. CPW officials say all have been harmed by reduced stream flows, changes in water quality, and competition with other species. Jim White, an aquatic biologist for CPW in Durango, said in a press release that the agency will look into propagating the new subspecies in hatcheries and reintroducing them to their historic habitat. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Aspen City Council will ask voters where they want to build new city offices. Last week on Valley Roundup, host Allison Bektesh and Curtis Wackerly discussed proposed options.
All right, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we do have official ballot language for that city office vote. The council decided on that this week. And the options are if the offices should be built at 517 East Hopkins or 427 Rio Grande Place. And it involved also making a settlement with people who were against that building at Rio Grande Place. Curtis, why did there have to be a settlement involved in a ballot issue?
So when the council approved that building last year in April of 2017, they were sued by some citizens who wanted a public vote on that project. And the city felt that it wasn't subject to a referendum. They thought that you couldn't actually have a public vote on it. These guys went out and got signatures. Turns out they came up short on their signatures. It's been a really sort of complicated legal battle, but it ultimately came down to them not having enough signatures. The case is still pending. There's another case. You know, there's all sorts of litigation around this. And the council ultimately decided to put it on the ballot, not an up or down vote on the project these guys were opposed to, which is what they wanted at first, but a choice between 2 options, because in the midst of all this, the city kind of came up with a plan B where they negotiated a deal with Mark Hunt, the developer who owns a bunch of buildings downtown and is in the process of redeveloping them, to buy some office space from him in 2 of his buildings that are across Hopkins Avenue from the existing City Hall. So, you know, there's a lot of appeal to having it all be being together there, kind of right across the street from one another, instead of building on this site that's, you know, basically 2 blocks away. You know, there's pros and cons to both options. You know, by doing this, you know, by putting it on the ballot, the council settled the lawsuit. They were able to get the plaintiffs to agree that, okay, you know, this is close enough to what we wanted. So the lawsuit will most likely go away after the vote.
It's funny to me that they didn't just put the ballot measure up, lawsuit or not, that they were like dangled mm-hmm. this carrot out. And mm-hmm. would they literally not have let the public vote if the lawsuit had been settled?
I think they might have. I think there's a fair amount. You know, like I said, there's a lot of pros and cons to both options. And the council may have said, well, let's just see what the public wants anyway, even if it wasn't for the lawsuit settlement. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you could read the tea leaves, I think there's still a lot of support on council for the, you know, for the Galena option, which is building on the city's own land 2 blocks away. You know, so maybe that would have enough support without going to a vote.
Okay. There's something to be said for passing the buck to the public, right? Like whatever gets built now, either way, the city gets offices.
The public owns it. Yeah.
Right. And I'm curious what you all think. This decision is being made by a very small electorate. It's only City of Aspen voters who are going to decide where these new offices go.
And it's a midterm, so traditionally there aren't, you know, turnout for a midterm is not as much. However, as Curtis and I were talking with John over at Grassroots, there's a lot on this midterm, you know. Yeah. And so I think you might see a better turnout than most years because of that, with all the mill levies that are out there now, with this and with the idea of changing the voting day for municipal elections. I think that will help this cause to get more people out there. But to Curtis's point, I question if they wouldn't have had an either or, would they have put it on the ballot? Because they don't, you know they know they're going to get their city building either way. So, I think the biggest part of the whole, the idea of getting that place on Hopkins.
And that was their main argument, you know, that when they were talking about how they didn't want to put it on the ballot, you had the city manager get up in a public meeting and say, do not put this on the ballot. Public buildings always lose. The public is never going to go for it. There's a now sort of infamous line that's been quoted over and over again where he said, you know, basically mandatory colonoscopies and new government buildings are right up there
on
the public's the public's appetite for things they want. So don't put this on the ballot.
Pickens County has been working to update its land use and energy codes. As Elizabeth Stewart-Sevy reports, commissioners will hear an update today on changes to the Renewable Energy Mitigation Program, or REMP.
REMP uses fees and incentives to offset impacts of energy-intensive development, like snowmelt systems. The county has found that to meet the program goals of offsetting 100% of excess usage, fees need to double. Along with increasing existing fees, staff is considering adding new ones, which for the first time could include interior energy use. Funds collected through REMP are used for energy efficiency programs and grants. Staff is also working on incentives for reusing or recycling building materials. Now, as much as 80% of the garbage headed to the Pickens County landfill is from construction and demolition waste. Elizabeth Stewart-Sevry, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
The Roaring Fork Transportation Authority, or RAFTA, is asking voters to approve a new property tax. But even if it passes, RAFTA will have to make some sacrifices.
In August, RAFTA's board agreed to ask voters for a 2.65 mill levy to fund the bus system going forward. RAFTA and its financial advisor found that rate doesn't mean the authority is suddenly fat and happy, financially speaking. The new property tax wouldn't provide enough to create a comfortable buffer between revenues and expenses that banks look for when they loan money. According to Dan Blankenship, RAFTA's CEO, the 2.65 mill levy can work. It's just that RAFTA will need to replace buses every 14 years as opposed to every 12, which is the federal recommendation. They'll also need to increase fares by at least 5% every 5 years. Blankenship will present these findings to RAFTA's board today in Carbondale. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News. That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Zoe Rome. AspenPublicRadio.org is your one-stop shop for local, national, and world headlines. All of our on-air news stories are archived online, so you never miss a newscast. You can stream or podcast shows like this one and NPR special reports, browse photo slideshows, and find supplemental links to further coverage. Go deeper, go to AspenPublicRadio.org.
Join us tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup, when host Allison Bechtesh sits down with reporters from around the valley. Jason Auslander, reporter with the Aspen Times, Paul Mentor, columnist with the Aspen Daily News, and Matthew Bennett, reporter for the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. They'll discuss the proposed solar farm and the midterm elections.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.